Well, good morning, and we are here on day three of the convention, and working on the sawing a half illusion in the background that you can hear on the stage.
There's no muffled screams, though. There we go. Now it sounds authentic.
Now it's more authentic. You do not have to use your imagination. You can hear that plainly. Well, they're going to be delivering breakfast here shortly, I hope, if I get the waitress back over here again. So we didn't get a chance last evening to talk with anybody really about the Long Beach Mystics show. And so I'm here this morning with Eddie Wade and Daniel Herron and Tom Borjahan. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So tell me, what was your perspective on the Long Beach Mystics show?
Well, you know, I grew up in Cincinnati, and we had the Cincinnati Counts of Conjuring. So I think it was more special to me than other folks. I just think that that energy, I'm still friends with half a dozen, 10 of the guys that I was in the counts with.
You know, explain exactly how that relates. I mean, the Long Beach Mystics.
Well, I mean, the Long Beach Mystics and those guys all got together, and they were, you know, 3-4 steps ahead of the rest of us, even in Cincinnati, where they all went out to become stage performers.
What do you think they did differently, or what was it that they had that you guys didn't have?
You know, I read Mr. Electric's book, and they didn't mention it last night, but I think they had lots of mentors that already had themed acts, and now every one of them has a themed act. Every one of them has a character or persona that they've been able to ride for the last 35, 40 years.
Right, right.
And I think that was an incredible thing. And it's something missing in magic now. We get these guys showing up, and they've all watched tricks on the internet, and they can't look at you in the eye. And man, we need to be able to do that and harvest that energy and rekindle it. I mean, I learned last night that theirs died in 1985.
Right. Well, that's what I was wondering. Perhaps it's just that era has died. You know, it's not so much that the mentors have, but they just are not doing that.
Daniel, I think we have more mentors, but they're people that are hobbyists instead of actual stage or performers that have been on stage or been in front of a crowd. They're people that love magic, have a great enthusiasm for it, but they are more hobbyists. So to be a mentor as a hobbyist is a total different thing than trying to be one who's actually a performer that's worked. And so we have a lot of people that the drive for performing and working on your act and the passion for that is not the same if you're around a whole club of people who are hobbyists, as opposed to when the Mystics were there. I think most of their mentors had honed acts, and so what they saw and what they looked up to, what they wanted to be, were established characters and acts. So they pursued that.
And so when I came into magic, and Scott was right. I mean, maybe that time has passed.
Yeah, that we don't have the mentors or perhaps those guys who pass on. It seems like that they did get some good ideas. I mean, they were talking about Armando Lucera, for an example. He came one week and he would do a mime act, and then the next week he would do a juggling. You know, next time he would do dove act or something. You know, and he was trying to find his character, I guess.
Well, and the other thing that they did better than we did in Cincinnati is, you know, we all worked with Bill Brewey and stuff, and Bill liked snifters, and Bill liked silks, and Bill liked feather fowlers, and so we had a bunch of guys who had acts with silks and snifters and feather flowers, and so it was like a factory.
Yeah, you're creating a lot more clones, I guess, you know, that way.
Right, and he was after getting people to win contests.
Before what?
That's what Brewey helped guys do, is be able to compete. They had great 7-minute acts, they just didn't have great commercial acts.
Right. So they were creating some clones. I recall, of course, when Lance Burton was at the height of his popularity, that he was, of course, the lead magician, I guess you would. It was most popular on television, and Johnny Carson and everything. And people wanted to have that dove act and have the same kind of music, and they were looking at affecting the same kind of costuming and all that, you know. So he was a role model, but people are trying to, I think, find mentors, but there are few and far apart. How does one become one, or how does one find one? Two separate questions, I guess.
Well, you know, but it's the mentality. I think you mentioned it. You know, the lecturer yesterday morning talked about how sound bites used to be 42 seconds long, and now a good sound bite's 7 seconds.
Right.
So we just watched John Armstrong do his plunger trick on Good Morning America. We pulled it up know, and it's made for short attention spans.
Right.
You know, it's divided. There's like four or five separate parts to it. He's on there for 3 minutes. He does one trick. Now, granted, when he's on there and does that one trick, everybody then wanted that trick.
Right.
But we're trick people instead of acts. That's my opinion.
I see your point. Yeah, kind of on that. For those who might be listening and not familiar with the Long Beach Mystics, I guess I should kind of point you in some direction. You should easily find anything you need to know about them. But they were a band of people, I think they started in 1955, that Stan was saying last evening, and disbanded then in 1985. But there were a lot of guys who had gone through that program, if you will. It was the thing that stopped it was because of the addition of the Juniors Club at the Magic Castle. But, of course, you know, some of the people who are more well-known include Stan Allen and Mike Caveney, Armando Lacerra, Kevin James,
Dana Daniels,
Mark Kalin and Ginger. And several of those people were on the stage then last evening. I was impressed last evening by Dave Diebel also. Very funny guy. Yeah, with the kind of a juggler. You guys like Dave Diebel? Eddie, anybody else last night on the show that you thought was really good or memorable?
What was the hat dance guy's name? I can't remember of him, but just the energy and all that he still had from back then, you know, and you can just tell that he's done that, he enjoyed it. I love to see entertainment that are having fun, not just going through the motions, and he was definitely having a good time.
Right, right. He just kind of jumped up from the audience, which I thought was kind of cool. Hey, I didn't ask you to do this, but since you're here, would you mind doing it? So it kind of made it a, quote, impromptu moment.
Exactly.
You know,
that I was really impressed at the vision of this convention, of bringing the magazine to life, doing a documentary on something that I may have skipped over an article like that if it was just printed in the magazine, but to see it as a live show and to hear the history, see the people, see the pictures, hear, you know, all their friendship and what it did for them and their career and their life, lifelong friends, it really does bring the magazine to life. And,
have you attended a previous Magic
This Live? Is my first Magic Live.
Okay, so it is, the convention is like a magazine.
It is. It really does open the pages of the magazine. And there's things that you would maybe skip over if it was just printed word.
Right. But when it unfolds on that particular day, you think, I could have overlooked this.
It's surprising because not knowing what it was, you may have also skipped the event.
You know? Yeah. That's good. I was wanting to get a perspective of someone who was a first timer. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah, I might have skipped over that event not knowing what it was. But I really enjoyed it. It was very well done, very well produced. I saw the second one, so I'm sure the first one was a little different.
A little bit. All right, well, listen, they just brought breakfast, and I don't want to interrupt over here, so we will finish breakfast and get ready to go to the 10 o'clock show in the opening session. And for now, thank you guys very much. Scotty out. All right, well, the first morning session, general session, was over. It was hosted by Justin Flom, who did just a fantastic job. It was a very good show. There was a fellow there, Xavier Cugat, or Kuber, don't remember, have his name posted properly on the website, but he did some fantastic stuff, you know, with a dancing cane, using a mop handle to begin with, and then had another kind of a thing that he did with a newspaper, kind of a daylight seance with a mirror, full-length mirror that he kind of interacted with himself back and forth, and that was cool. Another thing he did with a pair of cymbals that he was kind of, you know, clashing together but producing objects. It was phenomenal, and apparently he is starring in the Cirque du Soleil show of the Michael Jackson One, I think it's called. And so it was really true magic. It was really very cool. Also, we had then Bill Abbott, who talked about the history of the Invisible Deck. He gave a PowerPoint presentation. The first one that came out was Master Payne, who was a king of PowerPoint presentations and was talking about the importance of, well, not really importance, just kind of a observation, I guess I should say, of the magicians who, or rather I should say celebrities, actors and actresses who used to be magicians, who decided that they would rather seek fame and fortune rather than being a magician, and apparently those are mutually exclusive. And also the second thing he talked about is how that in the public consciousness that there's really only room for one magician at a time for people to remember their names, and that changes from generation, from decade to decade, basically. And then closing the show is Wayne Dobson, kind of a little interview and some short clips, and that was hosted then by Jeff McBride. Got a standing ovation. It was fantastic. Everything that Jeff, or rather that Wayne said was very funny. So after that, had to catch a ride downtown. We are just a few miles off the Strip, and so had come down to the Las Vegas Strip just to kind of revel in everything else. And of course, I have to go see if I can maybe slip over to In-N-Out Burger to get my usual fix for the In-N-Out hamburger. Since it's just around the corner, man, we got to be able to make that. I'm with Gene Protas over here, and I don't know whether that we're going to be able to make it, because we got to get back here before 2:15 for the next session. A couple of them are going to be going up this afternoon. I really want to be sure to catch those. If you guys get a chance when you're going to be coming down to Las Vegas, that one place that if you're going to buy some souvenirs, particularly clothes, that is T-shirts, jackets, hats, whatever, you got to go to the Monte Carlo. Sorry, that's the Casino Royale, which is across from Treasure Island next to the Venetian. Kind of a little hole-in-the-wall casino, but I always make it a point to stop by here to the Casino Royale because they've got like 80% off retail value. I mean, you can buy shirts that, you know, golf shirts that would normally be $50 that are $12, things like that. T-shirts, $7. Anyhow, just a lot of really good deals and good quality. I think they're like seconds, but man, they're good. So I'd recommend that. Come on down to Casino Royale. Man, I wish I kind of got a piece of their action because they're always busy. Very small, kind of a boutique casino, and this little area where they sell all of the stuff is over to the side, just a small area compared to the rest of the casino. I don't believe it's a hotel, though, either. Yeah, it is. It says guest room entrance right above us as I'm looking there. That was kind of just a quick wrap. This morning at breakfast, you got to hear from some of the guys, and sitting down at the table behind us just as I was leaving was David Williamson, Doc Eason, and John Carney, and they're just here hanging out. That's just kind of the way this convention's going. You just never know who's going to be around, so it was great to kind of visit with them, but I didn't want to turn on the microphone and interrupt them while they were about to eat breakfast then, too. Hopefully we'll get a chance to chat with a whole lot more folks. We got a lot more time. So for now, from downtown on the Las Vegas Strip, this is Scotty out. Well, before the sessions began, that I decided, okay, well, we had passed in and out on the way into downtown on the cab, so we will just grab one as we're starting to leave from downtown, or I should say the Strip. There's a difference between the downtown and the Strip, of course, in Las Vegas. I wanted to grab a soundbite. Hey, do you like this In-N-Out Burger? I thought I heard you guys talking about that. I was just... Did you say you liked it also?
Of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hear you say something about you like the taste of the burger or the
Saying I like the burger so much that I won't eat fries because I need as much stomach space
for the burger itself. I thought the fries were good. That's what I really like.
Fries are better. Yeah.
I'll eat Texas in heroin.
Yeah, I think it's great. I go out of my way every time versus steak and chick. I was just wanting to tell other people about that. I'm recording that for my podcast.
We've been waiting for In-N-Out to get down to Houston for a long time. They're up
Are
in
you
Dallas.
From Houston? Yeah. I'm from Houston.
Oh, really? What
That's part? Right. I'm River Oaks area downtown.
Yeah, I'm
here for a conference. Where are you?
Pearland.
Oh, Pearland. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm
going to have a number
small
of
world. Double-double. Over there, yes. So I came all the way. That's great. Where are you from?
Right now, Melbourne, Australia.
Melbourne, okay.
Yeah.
You don't have
came
a
all the way
Aussie
Melbourne,
accent.
That would be these two. These two, yeah.
Glad you like it. Well, good. Thank you. Thank you. So, yeah, I just wanted you to hear just a couple of unsolicited comments from some other people. It's not just me that happens to like In-N-Out. It's also everybody else that seems to enjoy this then as well. So it's really tasty burger, and some people like the fries, some like the burgers, some like it all. But anyhow, I'm about to enjoy mine as soon as I make this order. So from the In-N-Out Burger in Las Vegas, Scotty out. All right, well, we just finished with Gaetan Bloom and Kevin James. Just had an excellent little session. And in between, ran into Simon Cornell from Australia. We're talking about the fact that of nothing published in books. Your original material is there yet.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't currently have anything published.
Not
really
even
anywhere.
Lecture notes.
I've written a few little lecture notey things, but there are no tricks in any of them, because I honestly don't think that's the interesting stuff. When I've done maybe, you know, four lectures ever. When
someone's in Australia?
One in Australia, one in Germany, one at the Magic Castle, and one at the IMAX convention.
But you didn't have anything for sale. Well, that's why I think I remember you from as the IMAX.
I printed up some notes because I'd heard people would be pissed off if there wasn't something to buy. And it was just because my tricks aren't really that methodologically original. I'm mostly doing conventional stuff with tweaks and twists and...
Yeah, your presentation
and changes. Thanks. I appreciate it. And so I wrote notes on...
Vignettes, I think, little playlists, I guess.
Well, that's inspired by a lot of people, like Nutella, for example. You know, the biggest performers I know of who do that vignette style. And that's directly inspired by that kind of approach.
I was going to ask you about that, how that you did get inspired for some of the creative ideas.
The biggest inspiration was Penn & Teller by Miles, in terms of that kind of little vignettes that are entertaining but have some substance to them. That was kind of the idea, even if it was just entertaining substance or so on. But trying to even think about the number of different inspirations in everything is, I don't even know where to begin.
Well, you've had some mentors, you've had some people, I think. Could you mention someone last evening?
Well, the biggest mentor I've ever had was Chuck Payne, who moved to Australia 15 years ago.
You know, that he gave me still my greatest compliment to date. First time I was working the Magic Castle, and after I was in his close up room, and he came back over and he said, "Scotty," he said, "I really loved your show," but he said, "what I loved best about it was you." I said, "Really?" Yeah. He said, it was your personality. I thought, wow. And that was the first time it hit me that it's more important to deliver the goods of yourself rather than the goods of...
Yeah, well, that was one of the biggest things I learned from Chuck. There were kind of a few core things that he really, really left me with that really affected me in a good way. And that was Chuck's metric for a successful show, right? You know, you may have a lot of different metrics. You might think they were amazed or they want to book you again or, someone hooks up with you or whatever. You know, a lot of people have their objectives. Chuck's objective, he always said, was by the end of it, not that they thought he was the greatest magician ever. He wanted them to feel like they'd be happy to have him over for dinner.
Yeah, to be like a friend.
That's
an excellent way of looking at it.
I'd be happy to invite that guy into my house for dinner. Yeah. That was his metric, and that seeded into my brain very early on in when I was learning magic.
That would be good advice for any magician, I think, who's going to be... Yeah. Even those guys who've been around for a long time to maybe change their point of view.
Approach. Yeah. Well, and then I personally, as the years went on, I added my own secondary metric.
What's that?
Which was at least once in the show, absolutely fool the shit out of them.
Yeah.
At least just once. More is great.
Yeah.
But, you know, because then you also want to make sure you have that credibility. Holy shit, this guy's good. And he's nice, and we'd like to hang out with him.
That goes back to something I think with, was it George Lucas, I believe, or, no, Steven Spielberg, with Jaws. It was saying that you just want to have one moment, you know, when that shark comes out of the water. As opposed to, let's say, like Halloween, you know, you're not going to be shocked anymore. But there's only one good shock, and they remember and talk about that. So if there's one good mystery where they are fooled, they will remember that. Talk about that, and the rest they'll be talking about what a great guy that you are. And
they won't remember the details. We all know that. That was actually a thing from because I spent 5 years working for a global business consulting company. I was a corporate suit wearing, you know, business accounting spreadsheet guy. And one of the big things in giving business presentations or public speaking or anything is that you're doing really well if they remember three things from your presentation.
Yeah.
Depending on the day, if they remember one thing, you're doing well. Most people barely remember anything from a 1 hour presentation on anything.
Right.
So when you're designing one, take that into account. Work out what are like the one to three things that you want them to remember. Is it a phrase? Is it an idea? Is it a feeling? Is it a thing they realize, I should do that? You know, work out what you want to communicate and leave them with, and then really just drill it all around that. Because they're not going to remember 20 different bullet points of random shit. You know, it's not going to happen.
That's true.
With that Jaws idea. You know, they remember that one moment from the film.
Right.
Or that one moment from your show.
Well, it's just, I think, like when you go to a lecture sometimes, that you can be inundated with a lot of different ideas. And if you only teach three, they'll remember all three. Yeah. If you teach six, they'll remember none.
Yeah. Well, that's funny as well. I mean, I've been doing magic for 13 years, you know, which is...
full-time professional like?
No. Since I was first interested. So not that long, really, in the scheme of things. Right, longer than many, but really, you know, still relative, you know, beginner to intermediate. But one thing I've noticed in that 13 years, the more experienced I've got, and hopefully will continue to be, the less notes I take in lectures. At first, I'm devouring everything. I'm going, oh, my God. Because whereas now, I now have a better sense of what's going to work for me. I know more, so I don't need to make all those detailed notes. And now I'm like usually making one or two line, like, you know, something like this. I've seen a whole bunch of things.
Right.
I just saw the Kevin James Gaten Bloom thing, which I loved.
Absolutely.
And I only made one note, which was just numbered paper plates thrown around in the audience. Because I don't even really want to do that trick. It's a great trick, but it's not quite right for my show. But that idea of things being thrown around,
make it look
paper
like chaos.
Plates rather than balloons,
right?
Is just there's something in that that maybe, you know, a few years or months or whatever from now I might find a way to work with. But that just jumped at me, and I know I might forget that. And the rest wasn't relevant to what I need to work on, even though I enjoyed the thing completely.
Sure.
Yeah, you take fewer notes because you know you get more focused.
One of the things that I took away from that was how he made a slide into the paper.
Oh
plates.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
I thought that was a great
idea.
That was
really, really
so
brilliant.
So you don't have to worry about you know, them coming apart or something.
Yeah. I love that you're watching that evolution of the method.
Yes.
And, you know, we can all relate to that. You start up with a very simple method, but then you discover kinks from performing it. Then you try and fix those kinks, and the method evolves, and you end up with something totally different to what you started.
That's why I like going to collectors' meetings or hearing some lectures like where they've talked about, like Gene Anderson, perfect guy, you know, the newspaper guy, to talk about the evolution of the newspaper tear.
Yeah, fascinating. And
Wasn't it?
Bill Abbott with Invisible Deck.
Yep.
And it's so interesting to hear that, because then you really get a sense of, you can notice those arcs happen and start to recognize that in your own work and start to think, okay, when you're working on something for the first time, I find myself trying to imagine what arc is this going to go over the next years that I do this. And sometimes that gives me ideas I wouldn't otherwise have when kind of imagining, clearly this is going to evolve because everything does.
Right.
What's it going to evolve into? You know, and start projecting ahead and trying to guess where it might go, and sometimes that helps you get there quicker.
Do you like to build on something so that you have a callback? It seems like I recall last night that you had some callbacks.
Yeah.
Is that something that you try to keep as a theme?
If wherever there's a chance for it. You know, to give the whole show and act a sense of cohesion.
It makes it a complete circle.
Yeah, very much so.
So do you start at that with the idea of having a cyclical or...
Sometimes. The big thing... Right now I'm working on a new, like a one-hour, one-man show. I've done a couple before of various things. And I'm really excited about this because this new show is the first time I've ever worked on something where it actually had that cyclical arc built in already. Every other show I've done didn't really have an ending. They ended and they had a great final effect and yay, and that was cool. But they didn't have, you know, an ending that completes a story or fulfills an arc, or the way a good story or a good film has an ending that really completes it.
I agree with you. You know, yesterday that Tina Leonard was talking about that David Copperfield had suggested something as far as the Mothman kissing.
Yeah, exactly.
That completed
that button on it. Which,
and that's why today I looked critically at Xavier, what was the gentleman's name?
Oh, yeah,
the show
doing the shadow thing.
Yes.
Stuff.
And when he was doing the thing with the newspaper, you know, daylight seance and the mirror and everything, when the mirror shattered, and that was kind of the end. And then he kind of walked forward and then took a bow. It's like, something's missing right there at the end. I don't know what it is. Maybe I think he should fall. You know, it's like the mirror shattered, so he should shatter or fall apart or something, you know?
Yeah, right.
You see what I mean?
That's interesting.
Yeah. But, it just ended. It's like, thank you. And then he kind of took a bow and went to black. But I felt incomplete.
Yeah. Well, that's the other big thing that I've been really trying to spend more time on recently is realizing about committing to the theatrical or dramatic structure of your thing. Not feeling to come and go, hey, everyone, hey, how you all doing? Okay, hey, what's up? We're going to have some fun tonight. And just actually, you know, you were in the show. Yeah, that's right. You saw the show.
Yeah.
That thing about walking out and sitting down with the book.
Right.
Saying nothing. That was so scary the first few times I did it.
Right.
Because that was against every, you know, human and performance instinct I had.
Right.
And that was but it feels really good now that I kind of feel I've got that moment working.
Well, and you were committed to it
Exactly.
That reminds me of the, the guy that was from South America, his name will come to me in a minute, and he used to do the buzzsaw illusion as he would complete just before the intermission of his big stage show. And he would have blood and guts and everything would be splattering up against the screen and all on his white apron. And then it would go to black and then you would go to an intermission. And he never put the girl back together.
Nice.
That was a commitment, you know, to the... His name's on the tip of my tongue.
that feels very Penn and Teller-esque as well.
Yeah,
it's that style.
So I had people
really
talking, you know. Yes, I think that's kind of important.
But yeah, I'm trying to work on a lot more stuff like that. This is still quite a new space for me. You know, previously most of my stuff has been, you know, hey, pleasant, engaging. But I'm really enjoying that Rubik's Cube bit is my favorite bit right now, and I'm
solve it in your in your mouth.
Yeah. Well, which is
like
an old idea, which is you know a thing Ed Alonso put out on the market years ago.
Okay.
And I saw someone do, and just, you know, I'd seen that around.
Yeah.
Then just had the idea of putting a plot around it of, you know, why would you, you know, motivating it with, you know, the old idea of tying a cherry stem in your mouth.
Yeah.
And it all kind of, a bunch of things just fit together. And for that one, I actually had a friend who's an author write the text for me.
Oh.
I told him what I wanted. I said, okay, I need a, because, you know, I'm not a good writer. I'm an adequate writer, but I'm not an author. And I wanted it to sound like it was really a book. You know,
yeah,
it was
like
really
you just open it to that page.
Yeah, so I found an author. Anyway,
well, looks like you're getting started for this. We need to step outside over here then, I think, because that was it. I want to go to the next event. By the way, this my podcast is called The Magic Word. My quick question is, what is your magic word? It wouldn't be like abracadabra. What is your philosophy of life, your motto,
God.
Your creed?
You know what? Trying to tell it like I tell it like it is. I like to actually know what's really going on with things.
Yeah.
And that whole thing about, you know, put out into the world what you hope to get back from it.
Oh, that's good.
You know.
Very good. Simon Cornell from Australia. Thank you very much. And for the Magic Podcast, this is Scotty out. All right. Well, we came out of one session, and we are over in the Owens Magic Supreme special dealer's room, where Chris Angel is over here and signing autographs, taking pictures of everything. So I'm going to grab a picture while we're here for the podcast, too. Okay.
How are you?
Hey, Chris.
Scott very
Wells.
Nice.
Good to see you.
Hey, Scott Wells.
Hey,
great
man.
To see you.
As well.
How's everything going?
Doing very well.
Great.
You know, Banachek just had his thing with the Japanese network today.
Oh,
you know,
awesome.
In Houston.
Yeah, he'll be out here on Friday.
He told me.
Sure.
We
should get Shaquille Neal.
So I asked if he's going to be out here now, and he said, I'm coming out Friday, but we're still missing each other.
Yeah, he'll be out here Friday. Yeah.
Boomer. So,
great to meet you again.
Good seeing you again.
Yeah.
Take care.
All the very best. Hi,
well,
sir. How are you?
Okay, I'll take care of you.
All right, well, you heard Chris Angel in there and I chatting briefly after we had our photo taken. And as I step out, then I run into another old friend. And I say old because we'll get to that in a minute, is David Hira. Hello, David.
Hello, Scott. Thanks for that great intro.
Yes, well, the reason, obviously, we're going to talk about that is because the first thing you said to me, I'm not 24 anymore.
Yeah, I'm not 24 anymore, and every time I come to a convention, I find out that, it just hits me in the face a little bit more every year.
What, the fact that there are younger people who are here or the fact that you can't stay up as late?
Yeah, a little bit of both of those. You know, that's one thing about Magic Live I do like the best is that the first activity doesn't start till 10 in the morning, which I think is, what's the word? It's mercenary. It's just a mercenary thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the endurance of keeping up with any convention is just a little tougher. So I wonder if conventions need to kind of rethink that, because if you know your demographic a little bit better, maybe you make the changes accordingly.
So that way that you will have activities that start later in the day, you're saying? Especially since they don't have contests or anything here either.
Yeah, that's true. But it seems to me, though, because I'm thinking this through, it seems like, you know, older people...
Yeah.
They're early
senior
birds.
Citizens.
But aren't they early birds?
For the most part, yes. That means they go to bed early, they get up early.
So those of us in our 50s, which I'm going to include you and I, we're right in that same demographic.
Yeah.
I mean, for us, we're in that transition time where... maybe we're waking up earlier, but, you know, again, staying up till 2 in the morning is just not in my cards anymore.
Well, when I'm up 2 in the morning, I'm editing my podcast and getting this thing out. So I'm up kind of late. I get back in the room about 11 or 12, and then I'm up for a couple hours trying to put this together so my couple dozen listeners can get some fresh info.
There you go.
And speaking of which, I want to get some fresh information from you as to the kind of your take on what you've seen, what you liked, didn't like. How's this been going so far for you? What's some highlights, lowlights, anything?
Okay, well, the truth of it is people have been asking me that, and I said, you know, I went, this is my third Magic Live. I've done
hours. Years am I?
Yeah, in a row. And the one, the very first one I went to, which was two times ago, was so outstanding I couldn't believe it. The next year fell a little short for me, and I don't know exactly why, and this one is about the same level, which is still higher than most any other convention I go to.
Oh,
but
sure.
But I like the format a whole lot. I like that you go into a room and there's a speaker for 20 minutes, another speaker for 20 minutes, another speaker for 20 minutes, or that you know, it's just all bunched together rather than hear a guy, now get up, walk out of the room, sit down. It seems to be a waste of time just moving the crowd sometimes. So,
opposed to bringing the lecturers into that room? You should have everybody stay at one place, you mean?
Well, like here, you know, you go in at 10 o'clock and you're done at 12:15. You don't move from your seat.
Oh, there's no intermission.
Right. And you're not getting up. You know, there's a 9:30 in this room. Then you go to a 10:30 in that room. You go to 11:30 in that room. In some ways, that's good because it gets you up and your blood flowing. But I just like getting all my content at once. I think, you know, especially like now, I'm talking quicker because it's a podcast than I would if I were just talking to you normally because people listen faster.
You know, that was an interesting comment that they had made. John Armato, I believe it was saying that in 1964, it used to be that people had longer attention spans such that a soundbite would be 43 seconds.
Right.
Now it's, what, 7 seconds?
7 seconds or something.
Yeah, with 120 characters.
You know, when I leave a voicemail message, I speak very quickly until I get to the phone number. Because otherwise, hi, it's David, and, you know, those messages, it's like you stop them. You don't even listen to the rest of the message.
Right.
And then when you call the person back, they say, well, I left all that on there. I said, I just couldn't sit through that long message.
Sure.
So now when I leave a message, hey, it's David. I'm just calling to check on things. And by the way, if you can just give me a call back, my number is 469.
And then repeat it.
And then repeat it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I repeat it, then 469.
Yeah.
Just to give it two different cadences and ways. Anyway, long story short is,
that's good marketing.
When it comes to these conventions, and like I say, us getting older, and then knowing how many other attendees are older yet, is it time? I think it's past time for us to ask everybody, what's your preference? What now at this point in your life, how do you want these conventions to go? How much free time do you really want? And then give them what they want. Market, you know, that's what we do with every store I ever, every business I ever owned. When's the last time, other than Magic Live? Because Magic Live does a survey afterwards.
Sure.
Any other convention ever do that for you?
No.
None.
And I'll go a step further that the most conventions where I have been involved, very few of them actually have even a meeting with the staff, you know, the committee chairman, to see, you know, what went right and what went wrong, you know, just kind of a review.
And
it's kind of like
then pass that information on to the next group.
And it's not. There's a failure. There's a big lapse in that passing of information from one to the next.
But as you know, back however many years ago that I pushed for us to have that first TAOM summit meeting.
Yes.
And that whole thing was for that very reason. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do in the future? How are we going to take information from the past and be able to pass it on to the next group so that we're not reinventing the wheel over and over? And for a short period of time, we were doing a pretty good job of that. But now that's all fallen apart. You know, people are not memorializing last year's stuff for the next year's crew. And you know, if we don't want to repeat history, we have to understand it and remember it.
Right. That's true. Yeah, we can sit here and talk about conventions, I know, for the next hour or so. But everyone's got opinions. Most of them, I think, are kind of along the same lines as far as something needs to be done. But
still, of all the best conventions I've gone to, Magic Live is still, you know, for a working guy, this is where I really learn.
I learn a lot. It's a great opportunity to see friends as well. And I try to spend as much quality time as I can, you know, with friends to sit and chat. But it's kind of hard when there are 1,500 people here, and I know more than half of them, you know.
And for me here, I'm not known here, you know, so it's kind of nice. It's like I changed churches once because I was the guy. I was the one that knew where everything was, where.
So they went to you.
And I couldn't just sit there and be fed, and I feel the same way here. Here I can be fed and not be relied upon, and that's a real treat.
You can kind of walk in anonymity.
Yeah.
That was David Hira, by the way, the anonymous man.
Exactly.
I thank you very much for your time. I think you've given me your magic word in the past. I think when we talked, you recall what it was? I mean, if I haven't, then, you know, it's called the Magic Word Podcast. And so what is your magic word? Or your philosophy of life, your motto, what do you live by? What's important to you?
Yeah, I think the one there's two things I say most, but one is you can fake like you care, but you can't fake being there. In other words, show up. Just when someone's in need, when someone says, will you pray for me? And they say, I will. Well, why did you walk away? Why didn't you do it then? When someone says, if you need anything, you know, my husband's going in the hospital, and he said, well, if you need anything, let me know. Just go and mow their lawn. Just go and show up with dinner. So whatever it is.
And sometimes when you don't know what to do, the best thing is not to do not to say anything, but just being there with the person, right, like in their hospital room or in time of need, or just to make a phone call, say, I'm thinking of you. Doesn't have to be much.
And then my second one, though, that I think we close on is this. It's be a faucet, not a drain.
Wow. There you go. That was David Hyrup. And here we are at Magic Live. Got more to talk to more people soon. And so I think I'll go over to the dealer's room for a little bit and then maybe have an early glass of scotch. For now, Scotty out. All right, back over in the dealer's room then right now with Scott Huntsler, who you had were one of the winners that they had drawn your name the other night. Now tell me about the Friends idea. What did they have this?
So the Friends idea, so I won. You had to hold a balloon. The balloon had a...
Now tell them how you won, first
of all.
What do you...
So for every $20 you spent in the dealer's room, you got a card, like a business card, a ticket.
Yeah.
Put your name on the back of it. They put it in the...
big hopper.
The big hopper, yeah. So they drew that. So the more you spend, the more chances that you had. That's the idea.
Right.
I didn't spend a whole lot, you know. But my name was in there a few times.
Yeah.
So I was thrilled when they called my name. You go up, you pick a number on a balloon. And...
Okay, thank you for your mystery, sorry.
You have to carry the balloon around with you. But what they told you was at the end, when you come back up, you have to bring a friend with you. And if you don't bring a friend, you only get half the prizes. Because it's all about friends.
Right.
So I had the number, went back up.
You had to find a friend.
Had to find a friend. Luckily, a friend came with me out here. So, and we met out here, and a good friend, Tim Hannig. And so when it was time, I was number four. I picked the balloon with four on it. And that was from Pearl Mystic.
Oh.
So I got $300.
Wow.
In
gift that pays your registrations?
Yeah, for $300 in gift certificate to Pearl Mystic, anything I want. But
just
then
like,
Tim...
That's like half of one thing from there.
It's half of one thing, yeah, right. They got it figured out. But then my friend Tim, for doing nothing, they gave him $200.
Wow.
So that was a pretty good deal.
At Pearl Mystic also.
At Pearl Mystic also.
That's
and also threw in a triple threat wallet or something like that, which he took, which we're still fighting about now. So it's been a great time.
Trade it off.
Very good.
So
very
enjoyed
generous.
It.
Very
That's
much.
A good kickoff for you then.
Oh, yeah, it was great. Yeah. So
thanks very much.
Sure.
And while I'm here, Errol, I want to talk with you then as well. And then I got Mark Whitehouse as well to kind of get your impressions of what you thought so far then of the convention. Was this your first one, Errol? By the way, last name Errol is?
Lipschitz.
Lipschitz. I'm going to stand kind of out of the way. I'm probably blocking sales over here. But Mark and Errol, do you know each other, by the way?
No,
this is all about friends.
Lipschitz, right. How do you do? Mark Whitehouse,
good to meet you.
Former president of the SAM.
Wow.
Former. Former president.
That's great.
And so you've had a lot of experience in going to conventions, and so you've had a good experience with this one. One of your favorites.
Yeah. Oh, this is fun. This is. I've been to all the Magic Lives except the first one.
Yeah.
I kicked myself for not being at that one too. So. And this is a great theme.
Kind of like Dave Vernon saying he wasted the first 5 years of his life because he wasn't into Magic.
Right. That's right.
So.
But I love the theme of this one, the friends, because that's what, for me at least, I'm really enjoying getting to be with everybody.
Yeah. Well, you get around. I mean, when you were the president, you probably went around to how many different cities? And a lot.
Yeah, I tried to get to as many as I could.
Sure. Now, Errol, is this your first?
This is my first.
All right. So tell me a little bit about this, then.
It's been not overwhelming, but it's been just unbelievable. I just can't believe how friendly everybody has been and how welcoming and how much there is to see and look at and perhaps even buy.
Yeah. And you come from Australia?
I'm from South Africa.
South Africa, originally.
I live in Vancouver. So, and this has been amazing. I didn't think I would enjoy it half as much as I have. And it's not even over. So, I mean, I don't want to think about it being over, but it's been super. I had to take a bit of a break this afternoon because it was like too much
overload
for me. But I'm looking forward to tonight and. I've had pictures with Johnny Thompson and his wife, Pamela Hayes. And
did you see Chris Angel also?
I had a picture with him earlier by accident.
Yeah.
And the picture with Penn.
Penn Pendulette.
So
Lance Burton, you know, everybody.
No, I missed him.
He's been around, yeah.
Yeah, I've missed him, but it's totally exciting. I saw David Regal, who I bought some stuff from before, and I wanted to meet him in person, so I had an opportunity.
Yeah.
And even people that I've seen perform in Vancouver. I saw Joe Monty. Well, he was in Victoria, and just willing to talk to anybody, you know, even me. I mean, a beginner, and just amazing. So it's been outstanding.
So you said that it has been outstanding, but not overwhelming, or it is overwhelming?
It has been a bit overwhelming. I mean, a lot of the magicians are people way above my level, so when they talk about, you know, a slip or a pass, some of that is lost on me. But
yeah.
There's enough that I've been able to glean that that will be helpful for me.
Oh, no, there's a little bit for everybody, so, but everything is not for everybody.
Absolutely.
You know, that's here. So that's the nice thing about picking and choosing. You know, what it is that you want to what you want to do, and that's kind of the nice thing about choosing the sessions. I guess you want to attend.
With so well organized and everything done so professionally and very classy.
Yeah.
So I'll be back.
Well, very good. Thank you guys very much. Appreciate your impressions over there. So from the dealer's floor of Magic Live, this is Scotty out. Well, we just finished watching a film, Deceptive Practices. Is that the name of the movie, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yes, and I've got Tim Felix here, and you were involved in the movie?
Not in the movie at all.
But on the...
No, but I worked with Ricky, so...
And so your thoughts on seeing this documentary of him was...
I enjoyed it thoroughly. And it captured Ricky as Ricky is.
Yeah.
It was entertaining. It was interesting. And it was a bit different.
Yeah.
Ricky's a bit different.
It was. It was not the kind of life story that you kind of might expect.
Not at all. In fact, there was more detail about his early life than even I knew. And Ricky is guarded about his early life. He doesn't talk about his early life. He doesn't talk about being a kid.
You think? Well, I wondered about that because it seemed like there were a lot of things that could have been told that he didn't. Like, of course, I guess he didn't have a relationship with his parents, so he left early.
He's always been quiet about that, never really talked about it. The fact that there was film of him performing as a youngster was a surprise to me. And it was fun to see.
What was perhaps the most enlightening thing to you, having known him?
Enlightening thing to me was how he met Weber.
Explain that story, though.
Well, I worked with Ricky and Michael, and Michael's an ingenious man, a fascinating guy.
Right.
And we're kind of unique in that we're friends of Ricky's. Ricky doesn't have a lot of friends in magic. He keeps to himself.
Yeah.
And I had no idea how he had met Michael. I know he respects Michael. I know Michael respects him. They work together with their company, Deceptive Practices, and it was just kind of interesting for me to hear that story. I'd never heard it.
Well, when it said that he was a partner, worked with him on Deceptive Practices, what exactly does Michael do with him? Is he kind of give him some suggestions and ideas and things? I mean,
he writes a partner in the best sense of the term. Arcane knowledge on a need-to-know basis.
Yeah.
They do consulting work from films, on and on. If you need arcane knowledge, that's where you go.
Yeah. If one doesn't know it, the other one does, kind of thing.
And they're good foils for each other.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, it was a very good movie. I don't know that that's going to be something that will be accepted in wide release because it was a documentary and it seems like there is a niche market for that.
Well, it's a documentary, well done documentary.
Oh, yeah.
It played in Chicago for 2 days. I didn't have the opportunity to go down and see it.
Yeah.
So I was thrilled to be able to come and see it here.
Yeah, sure.
And now I can talk to Ricky about it and not BS my way through any kind of a description.
Because you've seen it. What are you going to tell him when you see it?
That I liked it.
Yeah.
I'm glad I went.
And honestly,
I was very glad I went and I was able to see it. We didn't know if we'd get back from dinner in time to catch
make it
the show. So it was a wonderful experience.
Good. Tim, thank you very much. I appreciate
it. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So Peter Samuelson and John Stetson also here. What do you guys think of the movie?
I loved
the documentary.
I absolutely loved it. Agreed. Yeah.
It seemed that it was for magicians. However, I think that others will like it. You don't have to be a magician. You know, a lot of people like documentaries. And it was a very specialized kind of a thing.
You don't have to be a magician at all to enjoy that film or pick up on any of it. Let me tell you a great story that you can edit out of this.
Okay.
I was in a small sidewalk cafe in New York.
Yeah.
And my wife and I were there for a magician's wedding. And we're noticing there's a table of young 20-somethings at the next table. And three guys and a gal.
Yeah.
And the gal, and somehow I realized that one of the young fellows had an interest in sleight of hand magic, and they were talking about this movie, the Now You See It movie that was, out there.
Yeah.
So they're discussing that, and then they start saying, but there's another movie, and they were talking about this movie and how they wanted to see it. And it was very interesting because when I said Ricky Jay, the girl says, is that some hip-hop guy?
Yeah, like Jay-Z, you know, or something.
You think of the name, and so you think of what people think of nowadays. But the best part of the story for me is the young lady was so animated through all the rest of the conversation, and it turned to card magic for less than 2 minutes, and then my wife nudges me, points to the table, her head is down on the table. Totally out of the conversation.
Yeah.
Proving once again that magic is the black hole of conversation, and it should be kept away from those who have no interest.
Sometimes when I start talking about that, then my wife says too, "I think you drug the party to a complete stop there again." You know, this discussion, because no one else has anything to contribute. It seems like, you know, into that.
Ricky has such a high visibility in so much of the non-magic world because of his work with Mamet and Deadwood and his other things that have really put him into the movies and this visibility. So I think that people know him not only from the magic. So I think it's a very interesting side of this. And the fact that it talks about mentors and the people of historical importance, both as a personal growth path for him and also as sort of those historical people in one's lives that one feels have shaped that life. And I think that there's a humanity to Ricky that you see in this film that you know, it's not something you encounter all the time. The fact that it finally turns to his marriage and this moment of his life when he's found this happiness.
Right.
I will relate a story, too, from this is years ago when I was out working cruise ships. And I was stopping in Los Angeles, and I happened to call Ricky, and he said, yeah, come on by, and we were talking, and we were sharing some things. He said, my manager has just gotten this, we've got a dance group they're doing, and we're throwing a party for them, and so come along. And we picked up a couple other magicians, and we sort of went to this event, and there's a party, and the actors and the dancers are mingling, and in the corner are all the magicians standing in a group. And I've just been out on cruise ships where you learn that you have to circulate with a passenger. And so I just jump in there, and I'm walking up, and I'm talking to people and having a beverage and chatting. And I walk back to the group of magicians that are still clustered in the corner, and they turn to me and they go, how do you do that? And I think magicians really don't have a natural, easy way. And so the fact that you look at Ricky has found his way into a world of sort of normalcy and to a humanity and an open life, I think is really
and maintains a visibility as a magician, you know, which is contrary to what Master Payne was talking about, you know, in the morning session, about saying that there's fame and fortune and then all magicians must exit, you know, here before you go into that area, and that so many people that he had named who are movie stars, celebrities, you know, it seems like who have made it and left magic behind, and they don't talk about that much. And it seems that he has arced that together, unlike any that I can think of, who is known in the social consciousness as both a magician and a celebrity. Steve Martin might be another one that could be close, that could be thought of as doing some magic, being known as that, or as others wouldn't.
Years ago, I think Harry Anderson would have fallen into that category.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a remarkably entertaining movie, and
well, you all knew, each of you three know Ricky and have met him. I mean, in each of your areas, in Boston, New York, and Chicago, and work with him or known him. Any stories you can relate?
Well, the one I just told you that's there. The other thing is just it's lovely knowing David Roth and having David have all this insight into the backstage world of Ricky. It's been a very nice thing.
Yeah, he's his 53rd assistant.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The way I feel about Tim. As in the days of con men and gamblers and magicians and in days of old, Tim would just kind of give Ricky the look that I was okay to be standing there.
Yeah. Okay.
And which goes to show you the high regard he is held
for Tim. Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, it could have been a Donnie Brasco situation, and I would have killed him.
But
any stories I have about Ricky, he would probably prefer that I do not relate.
Sure. Okay.
Everything he wanted to be told about his life is in that movie. You need to see
in the film.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very good.
And you got to remember, I mean, there are some pretty big warts in that movie. Mm-hmm. When we talk about embarrassing stories, or we all have stories about our idiosyncrasies and who we are, our eccentricities. But you know, here's a man who will go against convention and say, "Yeah, my parents and I, we just didn't get along."
Yeah, there was no rapport, and finally,
I left them. They didn't seem to have, you know,
and
he walked out, kind of thing, which is not something a quote-unquote good son does,
right?
You know, and he goes against the norm of, you know, having children and getting a job. You know, he just goes against the norm of everything, and was not ashamed to talk about,
right.
And never has been ashamed to talk about times when he's. Maybe not had a lot of money or whatnot.
Got one.
Okay. I knew if I stalled long enough.
Thank you, John.
We find one he could tell.
I was a kid working at Magic Inc. And Jay said, Ricky Jay is coming in.
Yeah.
Well, I knew who he was. You know, I'd seen him on TV, but I didn't know him. And I decided to set him up. Cards as Weapons had just come out.
Yep, so 77, wasn't it?
Yeah. I took a copy of the book, and I cracked the spine open to one of the pictures of the bare-breasted girl.
Yeah, yeah. And the proper way to hold a card.
Put a little sign on the front of the book, said, "Bathroom copy, do not remove," stuck it on the toilet, and waited for Ricky to head to the bathroom, which he did sooner or later.
Yeah.
And from the bathroom, I heard the Ricky laugh, the when he saw it. So that's early on meeting Ricky.
Well, I guess there's one story that I can look at how nervous Tim is right now. No, and I think it's a commonly known fact that Ricky does not enjoy having his photograph taken.
Yeah.
And that's
is that fair? Public knowledge, would you say?
You're stealing my soul.
That was quote unquote. And there was an incident where I totally lost my head at a magical history conference once, but managed to backpedal. If I do say so myself quite nicely, I had this new little camera with me, and there was this very small group of us sitting there, two or three of us, and I believe it was you, and were you at that? I can't remember. But there were three of us sitting there, and I just had this shiny new camera. Said, "Hey, Ricky, how about a picture?" Well, Stetson, I think you know the answer to that. Absolutely not. I mean, you should know this about me. I don't do this. I don't pose a photograph. I don't photograph well, and I do not like to have my photograph taken. You know the answer to this question. And that gave me enough time to say, "Ricky, I want you to take our picture."
Yeah.
And handed him the camera, and we posed for the shot. And he was like, "Well, the only thing you're risking is a bad picture. I mean, I don't know how this works." So, yeah, if it had a black cloth and some gunpowder attached to a stick, you'd know how to work it. And he laughed.
Yeah.
And that photograph, I do not believe it exists, because our ultimate gag for that was going to be to have it be in Magic Magazine as the final word.
Yeah.
With just the three of us sitting there, but the photo credit, Ricky J, and everybody would have known the game.
Yeah.
The result of that. So that we're allowed to tell that one, I think.
I believe so.
Yeah, it's funny, it's something that you had referred to there as far as like having the black cape over it, because of what he had said during the movie, that he doesn't have any knowledge of anything taking place in the 20th century. Everything, it seems like, is for that. Because of his arcane knowledge. As you had mentioned, I guess, when he has Michael Weber added to that, I think that pretty much covers history.
Exactly.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, the two of them.
If I have a question, it used to be Jay Marshall.
Yeah.
If I have a question and it's something unusual, you ask Ricky.
Yeah.
Tim, would you like to give out that phone number for those who don't have it?
555-5555. Yeah, exactly. Well, great.
But now, Peter, did you see him ever work in any nightclubs?
No, I don't think I ever did. No, I don't think I ever saw Ricky. And, you know, I think back on what the times were that we had sort of socialized and met prior to that. And it's few and far between, but part of that out of New York and then out of the Los Angeles area, too. Just this, sort of this mutual social world that existed there.
I didn't see his 52 assistants, but I did see On the Stem out there. And when he, you've seen the show, that he sells, after intermission, the suites, the $100 box of suites for $10 a piece, I think, or whatever it was. And I was in the aisle, and you know, he's coming through, and he's hawking this and taking $10, thank you very much, you know, and handing the box. And I had a 20, and I was wanting change. They said, thank you, sir. You get two boxes for $20, and went on like that. So I got two boxes.
I'm glad you got them.
I am now.
That was a very good investment.
I guess it was. I understand it was. I had to eat the chocolates, but I kept the wrappers inside. I've got the box. Yes, I did.
Very good.
Kind of like with you, I'm a collector also, Tim.
But the other thing about the show, you know, going to see, he's mentioned 52 assistants, that makes me think of. I remember Mike Caveney talking about going to see the Magic Show with Doug Henning, and I was very fortunate because I was around the theater a lot when Magic Show was going on, and a few kids my age were, and I remember one thing Mike Caveney said when leaving the theater, and he goes, "Wow, it's finally cool to be a magician." However, you know, in going to see Ricky, especially when he did 52 Assistants the first time at the theater where Monday Night Magic was.
Second stage theater.
Sullivan?
Second stage.
Yeah.
The thing about that was there were celebrities in there every night who were commenting on the show. I mean, I was fortunate I got to see the show many times. Of course, not as many as Mark Mitten.
Why is that?
You know, there are certain stories we can't tell. No, Mark had a very clever way of being able to see the show more than any of us. Fair enough?
Okay.
Anyway, the first night I'm there, I'm sitting behind Tom Cruise and Mimi Rogers, and Andy Garcia is to my right, and a very famous photographer sitting to my left. I mean, all these people that, you know, I'd have to watch PBS to see many of these people in the audience. But you know what I mean? It really gives Magic
credibility,
respect, and just raises it up out of the, you know, I always say my favorite Vernon quote was that he said, the greatest travesty in magic in the last century, or the last half of the last century, was a total trivialization of magic based on contrived presentations. And, hey, I'll say guilty as charged.
Yeah.
When I thought about that, and I went, ooh, that wouldn't hurt. But it's also very true, I think. Who lowered magic in the estimation of the eyes of the general public more than magicians? And I have a very difficult time to this day when I with self-deprecation of the art of magic. If someone is doing self-deprecating material on themselves, fine. But why do it as a magician? You know, I don't make any money. You know, as a magician, you know, those things.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it just makes Ricky's job a lot harder.
Yeah. By the way,
and all of our jobs a lot harder.
Was that Ansel Adams? That was the photographer?
No, it was Mapplethorpe, but I didn't want to say.
Okay, Mapplethorpe.
I recognized him because he did all our high school pictures.
Wow, I don't think I want to see those.
Are they in a museum someplace?
Thought.
Wow, that's an image. I'm sorry, John. I don't.
You know, I was such a hit in the last time I did one of these interviews.
You were.
Scott waited a full 10 years before asking me to do another one.
The Mablethorpe image is one that'll stick with us for a while. That will hold you for another 10 years.
But I had 15,000 downloads from that one.
Well, that was a fun one.
That's right. You and Doc Hilford. That was a great one.
I believe Jack Benny was involved.
I think.
It was
some of those guys for that time.
Quite a happening.
That's right. Well, you do such great voices.
It was quite a happening. I know, actually, I'm currently doing all four of the voices on this interview.
I'm alone
in my room, and
Peter, Tim, and Scott are really not here.
Yeah,
not at all.
It's just me. It's fabulous.
And it's incredible, John, that you can actually do two voices simultaneously.
It's the overdubbing.
Yeah. I can do it while drinking a glass of water.
I was just going to say that.
Yes, I know you were, because you're me. So, anybody have any more interesting Ricky Jay stories that can't tell?
I can leave you with.
I knew you'd be something
that I remember from this. Has got to be mid-70s, and Ricky was in Chicago, as was Max Maben. And Ricky was driving his Porsche 914 back to L.A., and Max asked to hitch a ride with him back to L.A.
No, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. Max actually needed a ride somewhere?
So, Max hopped in the car, and they proceeded to drive to L.A., but I had a picture in my head of pulling into Burning Groin, Wyoming, to a truck stop.
Yeah.
And Max getting out of one side of that car, and Ricky with the hair down to his waist stepping out of the other side of the car in front of the truckers at the truck stop. And it's just it's a fun picture.
And I remember that story because Francis Marshall wrote about it in Around Chicago for
Linking Ring.
The Linking Ring.
Yeah.
You know, travelers coming and going through the... Ricky Jay. I can't read this thing, just slapping myself in the head saying, boy, what a beautiful picture.
Now, the first time that I met and saw Ricky was probably about the 1981. I was out here in Vegas for the Desert Magic Seminar, and he had long hair, and he was doing the card throwing, and also that Vernon had lectured. And I got a great picture with Vernon, and then sitting right behind him on the row was Slidini, and peeking behind him was Christian Fechter, you know.
Wow.
And... it was just great. Then we all went to Siegfried and Roy's house, you know, then later, and they had the dinner. And then Dawes, Eddie Dawes? No, not Eddie Dawes. Ken Brook, I think it was. And, they gave... would that have been right?
They gave Ken the award, right?
Yes,
that
right.
That was his last time
that
over.
That was the last time over. Right. That was quite a convention and quite a deal. I'll never forget. Got some great pictures before digital, so I've got those somewhere back home.
Wow.
There, but...
it was also nice to see a little shot of Charles Reynolds.
Yes,
earlier,
I noticed that.
Just sitting on
right.
the side.
Right,
exactly.
And it was.
That's,
yeah,
that's
that was the life.
Exactly. And I went, oh, that's a younger Charlie. And wow, look at that lovely smile and that laugh.
Yep. What a guy.
It was either the Charlie Reynolds moment or the completely naked woman moment.
That they had
blacked out.
Attention.
One of those two.
One of those two.
All right. Thank you guys very much.
A tantalizing teaser for the movie.
That's right.
Could have been that.
Right.
Yes, I believe Mr. Skin rates that one. I wish I had a term for that. You know, I was in rehab with Mr. Skin's father-in-law. Very interesting man.
Which we'll save for
another
night.
That's
right.
No,
that's right. Thank you guys very much. I think that's kind of a wrap for the movie. Hope you enjoyed our review. Thank you, Tim, John, and Peter. This has been Scotty L.